Welcome to Politics in Four Sentences. We've got another great guest tonight, and we're going to have some interesting discussion. Now, what's this all about? Well, we're here to talk to people who love free markets and free minds. And I'm Max Whitehead, your host. I always forget to introduce myself. I just assume everybody knows me. But that's assumption, isn't it? So we've got the, and ladies first, of course, Beth Holbrook, who's our deputy leader of ACT, sitting here. And she's just come in the door and was panting. So I said to her, she's not to answer any questions for a while. But more importantly, our guest tonight is somebody we don't even have to introduce, Kim Campbell, who's been really the champion of business for many, many years. Well, you're a CEO of the EMA.
Yes, it was.
So, Kim, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming, because you've got a wealth of knowledge and contacts right through New Zealand, but more importantly, internationally. So I'd like you to, I've touched on a little bit of your EMA years, but would you give us a bit of a rundown in your background?
Well, I mean, after graduating from Canterbury University, I started a career in business. I was a salesman for ICI, the big chemical company. Sold 30,000 tons of glue into the timber industry.
And this is in New Zealand?
In New Zealand. And then very early on started exporting.
Yeah.
And so pretty much throughout my entire life, I've worked on international trade. So the international scene has been in my DNA. Asia, USA, Europe, everything from shotgun shells out of the old ICI plant, wallpaper, paint, explosives, chemicals, of course, plastic bags. I was export manager for Tricon Plastic for many
years. That's a word you're not allowed to say anymore.
Plastic bags, man, it was very sexy in the day.
Shotgun palace as well.
Yeah, look, you're amazed. I've been there, done that.
God, you got to love ACT, don't you?
So, yeah, well, I mean, the fact is commerce is built out of diversity.
True.
And if I look down back the corridors of time, there are very few industries, from insurance, and of course in later years I've been a director of Douglas Pharmaceuticals. I spent 15, 20 years in the pharmaceutical industry. I've also been in the health food business.
That was.
It was still
if
is.
You were part of the directorship of that business, yeah. My goodness, it's a private family business that did so well.
We're still doing very well. And now, of course, you know, a huge investment in R&D, a development lab in Philadelphia. I mean, Douglas is going from strength to strength. So my background is very much in business. My heart and soul is in business, and particularly in making New Zealand internationally competitive.
I don't think anyone can argue with you with that, because every time we see you, it's business.
And so when I, you know, comment about anything that we do, it doesn't matter about politics or social policy, anything else, it's about New Zealand being a competitive country, being able to go out there in the world and beat the others, because the world is unforgiving. It doesn't owe us a living.
Well, that's something we'd really want to get onto, because folks, I haven't introduced our subject at the moment. It's what's eating business. Now we know the man's qualified to answer the question. He's going to give us all the answers. So we want to hear a little bit what's actually happening out there, and we want to know if business really is depressed as they think they are, and we want to know some solutions from you. And what you, if you had the realms of power, what you would do. So let's get back into it. Is business confidence really down?
It is. Oh, yeah. No, there are people. And this is what's really interesting.
Is it anecdotal evidence or real?
If you look at the fundamentals of the New Zealand economy, they, on paper, look okay. You know, we've got the best terms of trade we've had in a generation, a balance of payments, the government deficit, you know, the government's books are in good shape. And interest rates are the lowest we've ever seen. In fact, the interest rates are lower they've ever been in the history of man, going back to Byzantinian times. So
I'll go back to my question. Why are we depressed then?
Well, the point is, what makes business people confident? Yeah, well, of course, they look at the fundamentals, but they also look at what's coming their way. And when you look at the business environment that we in New Zealand have to operate in, they've seen a business environment that is that just looks business unfriendly. Mm-hmm. And until that changes, they're going to stay the same way. Now, all the surveys show, hey, I'm doing okay in my business, but I feel badly about my business friend next door. What that's saying is,
I understand internationally, we're recognized as one of the easiest places to get into business. So
and it's
where
one of the hardest places to make money. And this is the interesting thing is, of course, New Zealand is the easiest place to form a company online. No problem getting into business, but you've got to make money doing it. And also, if you're a small business, getting access to finance is not easy. And the fact is, we're all busy selling houses to each other. So it's an enormous percentage of our net worth is in housing, and it isn't actually going into productive enterprise.
So tell us, why are they depressed then, Kim?
Well, let me tell say why they're pressed. They came, first of all, the previous government, for whatever criticism you want to make of it, it was business friendly. And so we saw, well, hang on, we had, you may feel strongly about the environmental and offshore gas, but an arbitrary decision about offshore exploration. No explanation for it, ideologically driven, and frankly, it was a dumb way to handle it.
And I'm from Taranaki, by goodness.
It was just a dumb thing. And business, not too happy about that. And then they can see the labor laws. And of course, that's death by a thousand cuts. First, there was a first raft of reforms, which kind of came through the system. And then, of course, now we're looking at this promise that we would have these nationwide, going back to nationwide collective bargaining, which turns the clock back to the 1970s. And everyone knows that is a really dumb thing to do.
Is that really heavy on business minds?
Well, of course it isn't. Particularly big in a town, they know it's coming. And then, of course, immediately we started putting the minimum wage up. And by the way, that was actually signaled by the previous government. I would argue that actually putting wages up is a good thing for the economy. But the way you go about doing it does require communication. It does require to make it easier for the businesses that are facing it. And bearing in mind, not everybody is working for a monopoly. There are a lot of small businesses who, they just can't put their wages up. And even those companies that have got government contracts, they're stuck in contracts that they can't get their wages up. So there needed to be a just transition. And a lot of businesses just didn't see it.
All right, Tim Campbell's saying one thing. All right, you're addressing why we're a bit depressed. You're saying that we do need to lift wages. That's a bit of a contradiction in many ways as well.
Wages, the fact is, I go back to where we've got to stay competitive.
Yes.
So what are the things that might make us more competitive, to answer some of the earlier questions? Well, we could do something about the taxes. And the tax system, is got indexing in it, so we're not actually adjusting the rates to make sure that as everyone's income goes up, that they're not actually taxed more. So a real look at that would make a lot of sense. Our corporate tax rate could be more competitive with our trading partners. And of course, we're a country that is desperately short of development capital. We have investment laws from overseas, which are absolutely arcane. And frankly, anyone looking at it is confused. Even if they don't think it's good or bad, they're confused. And if you want to do anything, if foreign capital just looks at that and says, oh boy, that's tough, I'm not coming here. Also, a lot of the decisions that the business has seen being made are somewhat arbitrary.
Do you know, us that are novices in regards to that, I mean, look, yeah, the Sky Convention Centre will be looking for hundreds of millions of dollars very soon if they haven't got it themselves. So is it really difficult to get that capital, is it, Kim?
I don't, on the really good projects, probably they'll go to the share market. I imagine they'll probably get the money.
And we understand the New Zealand Stock Exchange and the people are dying to give it to you. That's why it's frustrating. But is it our own regulations that prevent that from happening?
Well, of course, the world is absolutely awash with money.
Yeah.
There's more money than there are projects. And certainly it's a good idea. But then, of course, everybody's chasing yield. And so the assets are overvalued. But without getting into that detail, we're talking about business confidence. What makes a businessman want to invest? And they want to feel certainty. They want to know that the business environment as they go into the future gives them a sense of confidence that they're not going to have the rug pulled out from under them.
So
that's what's making.
What do you think of axe policy, Beth? You'd know our tax policy backwards, but it certainly must be an incentivizing. Do you understand what it is, Kim?
I know
this is a test. No, Beth.
But I can tell you, I'm not an act. In fact, I'm not a member of any political party. But I certainly go for the parties. I tend to support the parties that do things that are good for business. And Axe view, the way I see it, is to get government out of people's lives.
Now, you're retired, so why are you interested?
Yeah, I'm very interested because I'm an investor and also I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
And
so
of course,
Axe policy is a flat tax.
And there's a second thing. I do have to say this now.
Yes.
That you also vote for your electoral MP. And David Seymour was my electoral MP.
Oh, okay.
And he is an outstanding MP. Forget all the
Can
politics.
Can you just say that again?
He is an outstanding MP. He is a hardworking, he works for his electorate no matter what side of the fence you're on, and he puts his heart and soul into it. And I've seen him work on Sundays and Saturdays. He's even shot at my door in Remiera. I had to give him a glass of water because I thought he might expire from the heat. He is really a good MP.
He is.
And I think there's a message there for anyone out there in electorland to understand that to build a political party in a future, you have to have good electoral MPs.
Have you thought about a flat tax?
A flat, well,
how do you think that would go down? It'd be revolutionary in terms of
the problem is, yes, Technically, it's actually not a bad idea, but you've got to sell it to the electorate. And I doubt very much whether across the board the electorate would really buy it. They'd be too nervous. It's too dramatic a change. Any kind of change like this, remember, people do resist change. Any kind of change like this needs to be brought in. You need to bring people along with you. They need to understand what it means.
So less tax would interest you?
Of course. The business community, absolutely.
So rather than wages, would you prefer to have less tax on those wage earners? I agree with you that we do need to bring the wage levels up.
Rather than talk about tax and wages, I'd rather talk about real disposable income, because that's the problem. In New Zealand, our headline wages by world standards are actually quite high. And we have the highest minimum wage in the world. But the problem is, once you take housing costs out of that, and you take one or two other fixed costs which you have no control over, suddenly the disposable income that's available to live on becomes really quite uncompetitive.
That makes sense.
And so if you keep putting headline wages up, that translates into the costs in your business. And if you're an international trader, you become uncompetitive. If, on the other hand, you can deliver to your electors lower costs of living, then they don't need higher headline wages. And how can you do that? Well, first of all, if you look at the pay-come package of most people, particularly in Auckland, the cost of accommodation is outrageous. Trying to rent a house, and what's in that cost of that house? Well, there's an enormous amount of friction. There's the consenting system, which is broken. There's a whole lot of compliance costs that landlords face, which a lot of it's completely unproductive. If you make anything, you've got an absolutely absurd safety program, which is completely over the top and very expensive for any business to maintain. So the combination is you end up with things that frankly cost too much. And the way to fix that is to start having a program of regulatory reform that is seriously intent on taking that friction out of all those costs in people's businesses. And that's very much where ACT operates, saying, look, guys, let's get government out of the way. It doesn't mean making it a less safe place to live. It doesn't mean we're not going to have that. I mean, with all the regulations that we have and all the stuff that's gone on, we can't build houses that don't fill up with water. Think of that. So with the safety stuff we have, we're still building buildings that burn down.
Did you guys at EMA put in RMA reforms and drafts?
My proudest moment, after all those years, that's why one of the reasons why I felt happy to retire, almost the day when I joined in 2002, when it was I looked at this RMA system, I said, this is broken. I mean, roads couldn't be built, you couldn't build a church hall, you couldn't do anything. Any major project the country ever did was actually there only because of Acts of Parliament. Mm-hmm. The East-West Road would never have happened without an Act of Parliament. Well, you can't run a country that way.
No.
And to credit, and it was a coalition with Gary Taylor at the Environmental Defence Society and Stephen Selwood from the Infrastructure New Zealand and the Property Council, we went to work. And finally, we've convinced Geoffrey Palmer and others that this is a good idea, and David Parker finally has joined the fight, and they're going to reform. The only problem is, of course, it's complicated, but at least that battle is won.
Is the potential legislation going to be complicated, or is it complicated getting the votes to?
Well, there's two parts of it. One is people think, well, we'll just patch up the Resource Management Act. In the end, that's not the problem. It's the whole planning system, how funding goes into local body development for infrastructure, how we fund the roads, how we build the roads, how we procure the roads, how the government interferes in it, how we build the buildings themselves, how the Building Act works. And we've got three acts of Parliament. We have the Land Transport Management Act, the Resource Management Act, and the Local Government Act. All those acts of Parliament coincide to produce a perfect storm of great inefficiency and, in fact, a system that's broken. And that's why things cost. Our roads cost nearly twice as much as anywhere in the world. I cannot believe that we wanted to build a very short road between the southern motorway and the road to the airport, and it was going to cost like billions. It's ridiculous. There is no excuse for that. So, it is not beyond the wit of man to fix.
Have you compared New Zealand to Australia? Is it cheaper to build roads over there?
It is indeed, and they build much better roads. Much better roads. And now, of course, they're talking about putting a tram up the middle of Dominion Road. Now, here's an example why business confidence isn't there. Everyone says, well, you can argue it's a good idea to have a tram or not. Okay, let's say for a minute it's a good idea. Okay, I've got a business in Dominion Road. What about me? Nobody said anything about my business on Dominion Road. Yeah, what are you going to do for me? Or what are you going to do for the guys? You have to think about, there is a real cost in that. Nobody even wants to talk about it. They just want to put the thing up the middle of the road. All those people, there's thousands of those businesses. Nobody's even thinking about that. And frankly, I think it's a national disgrace. And nobody's even saying, hey, stop, let's think about this.
All right, well then, because obviously it's small business that seems to take the hits quite often. My observation in New Zealand is small business is not well represented. It's really struggled. And big business seems to get a lot of the attention from government particularly. And I'm talking about employment legislation is my area, but certainly other areas too. And you've just demonstrated another point, road buildings. And we've seen it here in the city where all those small businesses are struggling because now they had all virtually shut down because of the construction going on.
Well, I mean, if you want to get informed about this tram, Sydney, they put a light rail up George Street. And of course, businesses have fallen over everywhere. Of course, they let a contractor build the thing, but nobody thought what was under the ground.
Oh.
And the problem is, here's an interesting thing, and I just put that out there. Anyone out there in Bodoland, think about this. So you let a contract, and you say, yes, I'm going to move the pipes and the wires and all the things that are underneath the ground. But the problem is, so you move them. Now, we're now 50 or 100 years after those things were put in place. The laws say, oh, well, we have to bring it up to date. We've got to meet these new high standards. Because you're expensive. And of course, that's what's killed the project in Sydney, because all this stuff now bringing it up to standard, not just moving it, bringing it up to standard, is incredibly expensive. And I doubt if anyone's actually taken that into account.
And so the person who's building, a high rise, has to pay for the infrastructure to go right down that whole street just for that high rise.
Well, no. Well,
to update everyone else's infrastructure.
Well, the whole question of infrastructure, I think you had, you have a story to tell about trying to get here this evening. You know, if you look at our roads and the cost of building them, the question is, who's joining the dots between where the roads being built, where do people work, and where do they live? If you look at our planning systems, most of the time they don't meet up. In Christchurch, they did a rebuild, right? They had an earthquake, it was terrible. And so they built towns. They built these towns and places. A lot of the places, no jobs out there. It takes hours to get around. There's no schools. There's no shopping centers. You need to think about this stuff.
So, Beth, is anything wrong with our roads? Taking you a late here today.
Oh, look, everything's wrong with the roads. look, I live in Warkworth, and just about the time I was thinking about heading off, I found out there were two accidents on the highway just south of Warkworth, and you just can't get through. There's only one way through. Fortunately, we do have a motorway under construction, but many other major transport projects have been cancelled by this current government.
Well, all roads?
Yeah, no new roads.
No roads?
No new roads. But look, at the risk of being here as a pure audience member tonight, then I'd be quite happy to, because Kim's I'm finding him extremely interesting and knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Look, my experience on with business is very much at the small end, the sole trader partnership, small business owner.
I saw you nodding over there when Kim was touching on small
business.
Yeah,
but talking, anecdotally, because I am in daily touch with people who are in small business or self-employed, and talking about business confidence.
You were in a bar first thing this morning.
In a bar?
Was it a cafe?
That must have been a delayed delayed Instagram
10 a.m. in the morning, folks, and here I am, she said.
But now you've thrown me off.
I thought it was your business, actually. But
I'm hearing from small business owners that they're feeling they're being hit from every direction at the moment. Taxes, regulations, compliance. It's another one is labour shortages. A real shortage of skilled labour, and where they do manage to find someone, perhaps they've had to look at importing that skill. It's becoming more and more difficult to employ them.
It'd be a good point. So, Kim, have you got a solution for our labour problems? What do you think is that back to poor legislation?
Three very simple things that people talk a lot, but they know they haven't done. The first is starts at the beginning of our education system. 40% of the kids who, after 12 years of education in New Zealand, when they present themselves to work, are functionally illiterate. Now, that is a national catastrophe. Hang our heads in shame. We did a big experiment. We started some 25 years ago with Tomorrow Schools and everything else. The curriculum was to make shapes on the floor. And we did not make it as our core need to to bring young people to the stage when they leave school that they can do some basic things, which is add and subtract and write a sentence. So we've got 40% of the kids coming to school who are functionally illiterate. Now, that's a big problem for employers.
Absolutely.
So that's one problem. So we've got to get...
Even safety, everything.
And so a lot of kids are hitting the workforce who really need have to go to night school to become functionally illiterate. One. Two, we have an imbalance of what education people are getting in tertiary. We have too many people going into universities to do law and accounting, and then what happens is, of course, they can't find work, and they go overseas, gone. So the smartest ones, whoopsie, they're gone.
Yeah.
And we've got our polytechs and trade programs going broke. So we've got a whole program now to actually amalgamate. It's a bigger amalgamation in history, just about. We're putting all the polytechs and the industry trading organizations together because they're broke.
So will that help, Kim?
Well, the point is they've got to do something because they're all losing money. So what? Well, of course, everyone understands that's a problem. But you've got to, you can do a temporary fixing, a wallpaper of it. But actually what you need to do is recalibrate the way we stream the kids into it. Recognize that the community, if we don't train enough tilers and plumbers and electricians, artisan people who work with their hands, who can do things. And by the way, that's not a passport.
So
is
it a culture
problem? People make good money. Well, it's a culture problem. Because
parents are encouraging their children to go to university all the time.
But I don't mind them go to university if they also learn a trade and they work while they're learning. Because the fact is, otherwise, we're going to bring these people in from overseas. So the problem is, this is one of the productivity trap that we're in, is that because it's much sexier and more fashionable and more social conscious to go to university and get a law degree, we're not training enough people to work with their hands, and that's where the work is.
Yeah.
We need to have schools that train people how to be farmers. Our farmers, we're importing dairy farmers from the Philippines. Good grief. This is the backbone of our nation. And so we need to recalibrate when we look at things and do, if you follow, say, the European model as they have in Switzerland, Denmark, or Germany, where they have the stream people, and only the very small numbers who actually decide they want an academic vocation, they will go into a vocational work.
But a lot of those trades start off at a very, very low rate. And I'm talking about farming as well. Yeah. And the farmers are not very keen to give them any more. So there is a problem with our wages, isn't there?
Well, I mean, I think what will happen is, of course, the smarter ones will figure out ways to make more money out of it. But the thing is, if we want to increase our productivity, we want smart, bright people working in vocational trades. And let's face it, it isn't all hammering in nails and screwing things in a screwdriver. These days, it's electronics, it's technicians, it's fiber optics, it's all kinds of really exciting working in electricity and transmission and even now in the tech sector. But these are practical people, and it's not unpleasant or dirty work, but we've got it all wrong, and so consequently we need to recalibrate, and we need to start at the beginning.
Is that to fix it and recalibrate, as you call it, is that part of a publicity campaign, do you think?
I think it's incentivizing. I mean, my view is, I mean, don't get me into this one here, if you look at the market will determine all of this. You need to set the rules so the market works. Our problem in New Zealand, we tolerate monopolies everywhere. We allow vested interests to have their way. We need to actually let the market take care of itself. And the way you do that is make it very clear that you want things to happen a certain way, and it will happen. But the problem is, this education is a good example. We've got, in the education system, I think right now, underway, I think 34... I think at last count of reviews of our education system.
Yeah.
How on earth is any common sense going to come out of that? I mean, I really feel for the Secretary of Education. How can anyone reasonably get any sense out of that?
I think this country's just sick and tired of investigations and inquiries.
Well,
and
I mean, if you get in the government, I would suggest the best thing to do is make some decisions, tell people what you're going to do, and get on and do it.
Beth will be in government next year.
And I'll be coming to Kim for some good advice, I think, too. Yeah, well, because I think what Kim's discussed here tonight is a raft of issues caused by, poor public policy, and of which ACT has a solution to most of them. If you're not already an ACT supporter, you should be, because everything you've described is very much in line with the policies that we're trying to come up with to solve. And I certainly hope that they go some of the way.
So what are you going to do, Kim? It sounds like the ACT Party might capture you somewhere.
Well, no. One of the things I think is really important for us as a nation to understand is we can't change what happens out there in the world. Okay, we're a small nation, and Mr. Trump's going to be who he is. Xi Jinping's going to do what he's going to do, and Brexit or not. We have to set and those things we don't have any control over. The curious thing, with all of that uncertainty out there, New Zealand is actually well-placed. I mean, I've done the math on Brexit. It's negative or positive. I mean, it's actually slightly positive for New Zealand. It's not great for Europe, and it's really bad for England. But, you know, overall, it's probably okay. The trade wars sometimes are good, sometimes are bad. But actually, all of that stuff isn't a major threat to New Zealand. You know, if they have nuclear holocaust, that's another story.
New Zealand trade.
New Zealand trade. Our trade situation is as good as it's going to get. And while the US is you know, the New Zealand dollar is about right. I mean, all of those macro things are just fine.
I was going to explore something. I wrote it down as a question. I wanted to ask you this. I'm very interested in Trump shutting the borders in terms of trade. So what he's saying is their nation can be self-sufficient in terms of manufacturing, and we're not going to go and use China.
His nuclear weapon is trade.
In New Zealand, here we used to manufacture TVs, we used to manufacture cars, we used to do all these things, and we found it cheaper to get offshore and do it.
Well, the economics.
Can we go back there?
Yeah. Well, no. The economics is simply, if somebody wants to subsidize their exports to us, let's get the benefit of their exports. I don't have a problem with that. We got to play to our own, where we are good, we're the best, and we've got the best horticultural stuff in the world. Where we've got, even in tech, we've got some of the brightest young tech. I'll back New Zealand every time, but where I get a problem is we put public policy in place in New Zealand that gets in the way.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
What I say is, and it's not about subsidies. Now, I heard on the radio this morning this discussion about TUI Point. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. 14% of the country's energy comes out of Manapouri, and it goes directly to an aluminium smelter, which is owned by a very large international mining company, like them or whatever you feel about them. Almost no value is added in New Zealand. But this is one of the greatest sources of green energy in the world. And we're turning it into a commodity that just goes up, and there's no value added in New Zealand, goes up and down. And okay, to protect
the future. We even discounted the electricity for them, didn't we?
And it's terribly discounted. Now they're looking for more to stay in business. Look, you know, I don't want to make anyone feel bad, and I have no skin in this game, but I say sayonara. You make your own decisions, because let me tell you, the day you go, there are so many wonderful green energy things we could do there. You could put a huge server farm there. We could actually start producing hydrogen and use a green energy solution, and it would be one of the greatest sources of green hydrogen in the world. And hydrogen is going to be one of the sources of green energy.
Sure,
and
it has to become cars green running on it already.
There's a huge bit of land there. Okay, get them to decaminate. Guarantee it would transform Southland. So I would have no sentimentality about that at all. But those are big decisions. I accept that. You know, I'm not living in Southland, so I apologize to my friends in Southland. But, you know, unless we make really transformative decisions like that, we're going to be trading in like we're in the past, like we always have done.
Yeah, yeah. And that's probably quite true as well. So what's your hopes for New Zealand's future?
Well, I'm enormously optimistic, because we've got tremendous people here. We have, bounty everywhere, as long as we control it. Our fisheries are fantastic, one of the anywhere you want to look.
So, Kim, I want to know this before we go. We've got 3 minutes.
Yes.
And I want to know what you're going to do. You're passionate, you're driven, you've got experience, and you're retired. It's not good enough, and you've got energy, and you look youthful. What are you going to do
Country? I'm putting my energy in helping businesses improve, of course.
What, individually?
Yeah, I'm a director of this, that, and the other thing all over the place. And of course, I've got my own little television show, Business at the Speed of Coffee, where I'm trying to get the discourse on public policy out there. So we start to focus on the exchange of ideas, which can make a difference, and leave the personalities behind. To actually focus focus on the stuff that's going to make a real difference, and encourage people who are actually have got the skin in the game out there in the electorate to accept that sometimes it does take courage to make bold decisions.
We're not getting the right politicians in place to make the right decisions. What's your answer to that?
We get the politicians that we ask for. And frankly, I've never seen anyone that's moved into a public arena as a politician that didn't believe in his country, that wasn't committed to public service.
But we're not getting the results, are we? They're good for
frankly,
business.
I've yet to ask any politicians. They all really want much the same thing for New Zealand. The question is, how are we going to get there? That's the debate. Not what we want, because everybody wants, you know, none of us wants poverty in the streets.
Well, Kim Campbell's got the answers. Why aren't they listening?
He's just a humble businessman.
Look, I think we'll wind it up there, but look, thanks very much for coming in. Beth, that was good, and you got here under a bit of a stretch.
Well, look, I've learnt so much in the last 20 minutes or so, and now I know who to go to for some advice, policy advice as well. So
Keith, we might charge you. I don't know what
the
future is.
No.
Oh, it's free. For free business information, we go to Kim Campbell. Look, Kim, thank you so much for coming. It was really a pleasure.
It was a pleasure being here.
Yeah, and you're a bit of an icon in the business world, so we are lucky to have you here. So listen, folks, come back next week. We're going to have another stimulating, interesting chat on politics in full sentences. So we'll see you next week.